Talking girls, you know we got some problems. So tune on in the way we talk and how to solve them. We may laugh, we may learn, we might be your games, Miss MP.
All right, Lady Balls, before we dive into the episode, I have to tell you guys about a product that I've been using every day. I started taking AG1 because I was always forgetting to take my vitamins and pills, and it was getting expensive buying them all just to throw them out once they were expired. But I wanted to strengthen and support my immune system and have more energy. And that's where AG1 came in. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source ingredients, and probiotic to help you start your day off right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your immune system, your energy, recovery, and your focus. AKA, all the things that are important for athletes. Plus, bonus is actually affordable and cheaper than buying all those supplements. Not to mention, it tastes good. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/soccergrl. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/soccergrl to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hi.
Hi.
That's a lot of trophies behind you.
Yeah, those are actually none of those are mine, but
tell people that you just
I know. Here, let me move this. Even though I've worked here for like a year, we have not even prioritized cleaning the office, so
you've been a
that will be this winter, I guess.
Yeah, have you had any off days? You're already in the office now.
Yeah, no. So we're in kind of like a weird situation because obviously, like, you play so late, and then this week is finals week for our team, and we have a handful of like graduate students who this was going to be their last quarter, and so we did our like end of season banquet last night, so that then because they move home like on Friday. So we tried to just like get everything in so that then they could, you know, leave tomorrow and not have to come back.
Well, that was a nice extra celebration, I'm sure.
Yeah. It feels like a blur because we played late Monday night and then we were on a flight out of Cary at 6 a.m. on Tuesday. Yeah. One of our flights, we were on two separate flights. One of our flights, we sat on the tarmac in Chicago for 3.5 hours. So I feel like we completely lost Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then also, like, none of us slept because we had to be on the bus at 3:30 in the morning. So we all just stayed awake. We got home to the hotel at like 10 p.m. So we all just stayed awake. So my days, I'm like a day behind. I feel like it's Wednesday.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. Well, it's been so exciting to watch everything. Congrats on making history. Like, that was such an incredible game to watch. Can't even imagine the feelings. I mean, you guys came back from 2-0, went into overtime, won the game. Like, how did you as a coach and how do you think your players stayed mentally in the game? Because a lot of teams would have been like, throwing in the towel, probably not going to happen. And it just shows in your play. It probably shows in like the way you're carrying yourself on the field. Like, how did you persevere through that?
I think personally, like when I'm coaching, the number one thing that kind of dictates how I feel is whether or not we are, one, creating chances, and two, like as a staff, if we have solutions. So like, that's the only time I panic is when I look out there and I'm like, oh no, like, I don't know how we're going to adjust, or I don't know what changes we're going to make that's actually going to make a difference. That's the only time where I feel like frantic. But in that game, it didn't really feel that way, especially in the second half. Like, it was a very even second half. I thought, in fact, they scored the second goal kind of against the run of play. And we were being dangerous. In fact, like between the first and second goal, we were going to change our shape. But we were creating so many chances. We're like, okay, let's ride this out. Then when they scored the second goal, we're like, all right, we need to change our shape. But at least we had something to do. So we went to a 3-4-3. It looked like a three. I don't even know what the numbers are. Like, it looked like we had five forwards at one point. And so we had like something in our back pocket that we could try. And then the players, like, soccer is such a funny sport, right? Because we went two goals down after halftime. So it's not like we had really any interaction with the players during the whole course of kind of the drama of that game. But we knew that if we scored one goal, we'd be in it. And what's crazy about this season is we actually didn't lose one game that we scored in. Wild stat. Like, the only two games we lost, we were shut out. And so I think our team like knew that if we had one, like, we could do this. And then this is where, like, we try as coaches to prepare our team for different scenarios. I think they find a lot of security in that feeling of preparedness. So we do things like up a goal, down a goal, like these are the shapes we could see, whatever, whatever. And they told us that when we scored the first one, it was basically 10 minutes left, one goal down, which is a scenario we train on all the time. Like we do it always in 8 to 10 minute segments. And so they said, I guess in the huddle, they're like, we've done this before, you guys. It's just like training, like 10 minutes left, one goal down. Like we got this. And obviously we took the entire 10 minutes to get that goal. But I think they just felt prepared. They felt confident. They knew that, like, especially the way we were building momentum, that if we could get one, then we were going to be in the game.
It's it's amazing how you can be down to nothing and it can be a terrible scenario or it can be not so bad. Like the difference between being down to nothing and you're having no opportunities, there's no cohesiveness of the team. And then on the same side, the same exact score being down to nothing, but, you know, feeling like opportunities are being created and everyone's still playing with the hope and the grind that they're going to get the goal back. So I love that. And everything that you just said speaks a lot for preparedness and for, you know, feeling like you've been in that scenario before and, you know, knowing you can pull yourself out of it because you have that preparation in the past. Is that something that you've always like placed an emphasis on with your team so that no, you know, game situation feels foreign? It all kind of feels familiar to training.
Yeah, we try. I mean, the season's so short that there's no way you can hit every scenario, but we try to expose them to that in training. We also put a huge emphasis on adaptability throughout the whole year. So, you know, whether that's in training on different shapes, in games, taking risks, trying things, like our team played a few different shapes throughout the year. And there were a couple times that we made changes in game that we in fact had not trained on. But I think because so much of our identity was being adaptable, being flexible, trying things, taking risks, that then when we introduced those things, like our team went with it and they were able to buy into it right away, as opposed to like I've coached other teams where you're so good at what you do that then making adjustments causes panic. And one of my reservations as a head coach was I never wanted to be or never wanted to have that like trapped feeling where I know an adjustment is needed, but I also know the adjustment's going to cause panic. So we tried throughout the year to just like constantly tell our team, like we are adaptable, we are flexible, we can make adjustments in games so that then when we do them, they get excited about it. Not like, oh no, what we're doing is not working. We need to change. We need to like be all frantic.
Do you guys learn adaptability and like being able to change shapes in like a classroom setting or on a field setting or on both? I'm just curious.
Both, definitely both. And again, credit to my staff because they go above and beyond. A lot of times before we'll train on something, we'll give them some visuals just to see. Because a lot of times it's like defensive shape or shifting, like who's going to pick up which player, who's going to step, what that looks like. And so we'll kind of draw out graphics for them and then we'll show that on the field. One of the things we like to do at the very end of our like match day minus one training is like put ourselves in our shape, put another team in the shape we're anticipating to see and just like walk through scenarios. A lot of times, like the way two shapes match up, there's always kind of like a default open player. And so we talk about that. And then as soon as we find that open player, it causes basically like a domino effect. Someone else has to step out of shape to get to that player. Now these players are kind of on. And so we do like a very short rehearsal of that prior to the game.
I think that's so important. It's definitely something that players need to understand. Like being a student of the game is just as important as actually being good while you're out there. It's like understanding all that stuff. And it's amazing that you as a coach is making that a priority to help the team see with the visuals before putting into practice. I think that's so clutch. And you've done so much for this team. It's your first year and you won a championship. Like you're literally making history. What do you think has attributed to your success this season?
I mean, there's probably a million things, but as I reflect on the season, the thing I keep coming back to is the trust that the team gave us from day one. And it just was able to expedite like the entire process of us kind of changing the culture, changing the style, changing the identity of this team. There was almost no like resistance. at all. And that was something I couldn't have predicted. And I think that's really what allowed us to make so many changes in such a short amount of time. And yeah. I, at our banquet last night, I really gave thanks to our senior players, because I could only imagine how they were feeling a year ago when I was hired, knowing that they were going to play only one season. Like, really, I think they had a choice to make whether they were going to be all in or if they were kind of just going to go through the motions. And they just like dove in headfirst and kind of led the group into accepting us as a staff.
That's incredible. That's such a lot of players would struggle with that in their last year as seniors, coming in with a new coach and having the dynamic change. But it looks like everyone, like you said, like they went in with no, you know, reservations and were invested in the change in the culture. So that's awesome. What kind of environment did you create? Because you guys have had such, UCLA in general has had such success, but just couldn't get there. Like, what changed in the culture environment that you think led to the success?
I think a couple things. We definitely had themes throughout the year. One was this idea of playing with freedom, playing with confidence. And the best example we have of this is we have a young player on our team, number 9, Sophia Cook. She's a freshman. She turned 18 during the season, so like young player. And she's an incredible dribbler. And so whenever she gets the ball, we're constantly telling her, dribble, dribble, take players on, draw players, take players on. And she told us one time, she said, you guys, when I'm playing and I hear you guys say that, it's like I get a superpower, which is funny because it kind of alludes to her age one. But then like, but that's how we want our players to feel. Like when you have the ball, like enjoy it, play with a smile, try things. Now that can't happen without like defensive discipline, because if you're going to take risks, often players around you have to not take risks, right? Like they have to take a more conservative position. So understanding that relationship. The other thing I would say is we really dedicated ourselves to building the relationship between staff and players and making sure that players felt like they could come to us with anything. So the best example or example that comes up a lot is like playing time, right? Like maybe I play 5 minutes. We always tell them, we're like, if that is keeping you up at night, like come talk to us about it and we'll tell you exactly why. Or we'll say, hey, wow, like that's on us. Yeah, looking back on the game, we probably should have given you more on this. Fine. And I think those relationships that we built, the trust that we had, the open communication, it helped us mitigate kind of any big drama or any big distractions throughout the whole year. And so we could really, as an entire team, just like continue to move forward. And then the last thing we talk about is just like, I think there's this fallacy in college soccer where it's like you are either really serious, all business, and that's how you win championships, or you're like loosey-goosey having a good time. And like there's no in between. And we would say from the beginning, like there's no reason we can't be the best team in the country and also have the most fun in the country. Like the night before the championship game, we were playing Mario Kart. Like in spring, the last week of training, like one of the days we played kickball, another day we did Bruin Olympics where we had nothing to do with soccer. Like, and we really were intentional about that throughout this last year. And I think it showed in the way our team plays, the way our players like care for each other. And you could see that like in those last 10 minutes, like how much they just cared for each other and were willing to do that extra work. So really investing in all the relationships and then encouraging our players to play with freedom.
So much info there. I love how you said though, like how if someone played 5 minutes, they can come ask you. I think that was a huge thing when we were in school. You were so confused and it would keep you up at night. Why didn't I start? Why didn't I play? Why did I play half and then get taken out when I thought I was playing well? So it's so nice to be able to like actually go to your coach and find out why. And for you to be honest and say, you know what, you should have played more. Good point. But it's nice that that's a two-way communication and being honest, because that's how relationships are going to strengthen. What do you think has been the biggest challenge and the biggest surprise being a head coach?
The biggest challenge is just the amount of responsibility I feel. I think as an assistant, everything you say is just a suggestion. Like, and sometimes it's a great one and sometimes it's like brushed away like nothing and you kind of just deal with that. But as a head coach, like, you're always the one making the decision. So like, I have five people in my office suggesting all different things. And at the end of the day, like, I have to choose, okay, this is the way we're going. Another challenge was, like, I think I had a very clear vision as to what I wanted this program to be, and just making sure that all the decisions I made along the way were in line with that. And just that consistency, I think, is hard to maintain over a long period of time. I think one of the surprises is like how rewarding it really is. And like, as an assistant, again, you experience that, but like, to see this vision that I had kind of come to fruition so quickly, and to see the amount of joy like on our players' faces when we won, like, I don't think I will ever forget like how that feels. And it was like almost like a little out of body experience, because like, as a coach, I feel like sometimes you have a lot of ownership over it, but at the same time, like, you played 0 minutes in the game, so it feels different. But just watching them celebrate, like, watching them experience that full range of emotion, to just be so proud of what they did, like, I don't think I will ever forget that. And that's kind of like what keeps us going. And that was like that different feeling of kind of the ownership of that was surprising, but in a good way.
That's amazing. Did you always know that you wanted to be a coach?
Yeah. So I've been really lucky. Like, I've never really had a different job. Like, I, so when I was playing in college, well, actually, I go back to when I was a high schooler. I tore my ACL twice in high school, so there was a lot of time that I wasn't playing. And I had an incredible coach who, also I had a single mom who I think like didn't really have another option other than for me to keep going to practice, even though I was not playing, who just kind of like fostered that time I had off the field into coaching. So even when I was injured, I was actually spending more time on the field than when I was just practicing, because now I was going to like the practice before my own and just helping him out. And so by the time I started college, I think my sophomore year of college, I took over two club teams. So I've just been coaching for the last 13 years or so. And I actually wasn't sure if I wanted to be a college coach. That one kind of just fell into my lap. And it's not lost on me that typically Stanford doesn't fall into people's lap, but I was very lucky that way. And then kind of one thing led to another. And even this opportunity, like, I wasn't searching to go anywhere necessarily, but it was a great opportunity. And I had a lot of people encourage me along the way to kind of like take that chance to apply for the job. And then now here I am. So kind of a wild turn of events, honestly.
That's actually wild that that's what you've been doing since day one. It's really amazing. Did you have any role models when you were younger or even now who are coaching that you really, you know, take their advice about their coaching style and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I've had like this all-star cast of mentors along the way, which I think is a huge part of why I've been successful so far. The one kind of in my younger days and even now, his name's Albertine Montoya. So he coaches, he actually, you may know him. He was the interim head coach for Washington Spirit just a couple months ago. He coaches, he's the director of MBLA in Northern California. And he was my coach from the time I was 8 to 18. And he's kind of always just been my mentor. He's the one who helped me like fall in love with the game. He wasn't at our game on Monday, but he called me like in tears crying because we won. He's like my dad. And so he's the one that really like showed me how to coach, showed me how to connect with players, like showed me how to have fun and still be good. Like, that's what he said when I first took this job. He's like, don't forget, like, you don't have to sacrifice. Like, you can really be both. And so that's kind of been a guiding light. And then obviously I played for Jerry Smith at Santa Clara. He's been a huge help to me, a huge support. When I was interviewing for this job, I like called him. I was like, you wouldn't believe what happened, but I have a call. I have to go to UCLA tomorrow. And he just started peppering me with questions like of what they could ask. And so that was really helpful. And he's just always kind of sending encouraging words along the way this whole season. And then of course, Paul Ratcliffe at Stanford, I worked for him for 7+ years. And he's just like been one of my greatest encouragers. like always, even when I was a younger coach, he would always say like, Mark, you could be one of the best coaches like in the country. Like, just keep going. What else do you need? He one time asked me like, is there anything else I can help you with? He's like, I just never want to hold you back. I was like, you have never held me back in my life. Like, you are constantly pushing me forward. But he just like trying to find little ways that he could help me along the way. So I've been very, very lucky to have them in kind of in my corner. And every single one of them I've talked to since we won. And just to have that connection, I think, is super special.
So true. I mean, I knew there was an extent of that with coaching, but every player we talk to, they have like a circle of trust, you know, a group that like gets them through everything. But it seems like coaches have to have that too. You need to have that support system as well. And I'm sure that's, it sounds like you have a great support system. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for other female players who are interested in coaching someday?
I think like, one, surround yourself with people who want you to succeed. Because that's, I think, the biggest thing. Like, people who are looking out for you, people who have your best interest in mind, people who are willing to kind of put your name forth for opportunities that maybe you haven't been thought of for, because that's really also how I have benefited. And then it's just like, take risks and like, go out there and get your hands dirty, like go coach. And that doesn't mean like you have to coach at the highest level. I mean, I laugh because when I was this last season, I coached at Stanford last fall, I was coaching club for MBLA and I was coaching U7. But it challenges you in so many different ways.
Like, a little different, right?
Yeah. And like, there were things that I was doing with the 6 and 7 year olds that were more difficult than the things I was doing with the Stanford players and vice versa. But I think like, the more you can do that, the more you can challenge yourself, like cultivate your love for actually coaching. I think that piece is so important. Like, don't be afraid to coach age groups that people shy away from, for instance, the 6 year olds. Like, if that's who you love to coach, then do that. If you love to coach, you know, older players, do that. You know, I do think, especially for female coaches, that we tend to be risk averse. And that's something I really have to kind of battle within myself. Like, I don't really love to put myself out there. And that's something that I've had to, through coaching, like, force myself to do, but it has led to some of my greatest opportunities.
I love that. I have a kind of specific question, because it seems like any great team or a team that wins a big championship, the thing that those teams are void of usually is drama and selfishness of players, right? Usually the teams that win championships are teams that would just go to bat for each other no matter what. So I'm just curious if you've ever had experience coaching a team that was either filled with drama or, you know, individually motivated type players, and how did you like steer the team in a different direction? Because that's probably something we get the most questions about, is there's drama on my team, or, you know, a coach doesn't understand that their favorite player is the one that's causing the most internal struggle amongst everyone. So I'm just curious as a coach, how you attack that, because that seems to be the key that could unlock so much more success for some teams, and they just can't get past that point of, you know, drama.
Yeah, I think it definitely has to come from the top, and clarity is key. So like, making sure that every single player understands what's okay, what's not okay, and then having the courage to address it when someone does something that's not okay. I don't know if you guys know Betsy Butterick. She like helps with communication. She's kind of like a coach's coach, quote unquote. And she's someone that I've worked with in the past. And we were talking about kind of this exact thing. And one of the conclusions we came to was like, if you tell, or I guess you could say, like, if you have the courage to tell little truths along the way, then you never have to tell this like big intervening truth, right? And I think that's what coaches really struggle with. Is like, if you let things grow to now where you have, when you have to address that player, it's this giant intervention that requires massive consequences and kind of this dramatic upheaval of things, that then of course there's reservation. But if the first time I see a player roll their eyes, I just say to them, hey, don't roll your eyes. It's not okay. Like, that was not a big deal. but it saves you a lot of trouble in the future. And like, that's something that we've tried to do, and we spread it through the staff for sure. So it's not like I'm the police and I'm the one that's constantly addressing players, but like, if any of us see something, we'll mention to the staff, hey, we got to talk to that one. And it could be so subtle as, yeah, like eye rolling, or so subtle as to like huffing and puffing when they're on the reserve team, like little things like that, where we just, and it's usually just like a tap on the shoulder. We'll be like, hey, don't do that. But then it maintains the culture along the way. And so it's never like we get to a point where there's this giant outburst and now we have to have a sit down meeting and involve, like, you don't have to do that, because a bunch of times along the way, you just kind of like very subtly redirect it, as opposed to like hard left turn.
So that's your way of doing it.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Awesome. And that's, but it is really hard, I think, especially as a head coach, because so many times you feel like you're just the disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, here we go again. Yeah. And not having it as good cop, bad cop. Because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of coaching staff, that does happen.
There's always good cop, bad cop. There's always the one that you can go to and trust with, and then the one who is disciplinary. That's so interesting. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
I think last question we have, guys, I'm sure everyone listening who's in high school wants to go to UCLA. What advice do you have for a player to stand out to you if you're at their game recruiting them, or one of your staff is?
Yeah, so we obviously get this question a lot. I'll say this, like, every school is going to have their style and kind of like their preference and quote unquote the type of player that they recruit. But I think across the board, coaches are always looking for competitiveness, because that's what wins you games. Like, and using our last game as an example, like, who's the player that's going to score a goal with 16 seconds left? Or who's the defender who's going to literally like slide to block a shot? Like, credit to UNC. They almost went down earlier in overtime, but two players saved the ball off the line. Mm-hmm. Like, are you willing to do that? I had a player once ask me here at UCLA, like, how can I, like, what are you looking for when you decide playing time? And I was like, I had never seen her play before yet. This was before training started. But I was like, if you are the most competitive player on the field every single day in training, you may not play 90 minutes, but I guarantee you playing some minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, there's going to be a point in the game where we need that. Like, that will always ring true. So oftentimes that's my response, is like competitiveness. Like, you have to, there's like a saying, like, you have to hate losing more than you love winning. Like, you just hate losing. And so everything you do is so that you're like, no, I'm not today. Like, I'm not losing. And players that play with that kind of fire in them, that edge, like, that is so, so noticeable. Mm-hmm. And I think every coach across the country is like, oh yeah, we like that one.
I love that. Well, you guys certainly did not lose on Monday. That was such an awesome night. Congrats so much. And we really appreciate you taking the time today, because it sounds like you've had such a busy week, and you still, it's Wednesday to you, it's Thursday to us.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Thank you so much for chatting with us. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. And thanks for everything you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And hopefully we get to see your team play in person, hopefully next year.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Just let me know.
Awesome. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye. Soccer girls, you know
we got some problems. So tune in, away we talk and how to solve them. We may laugh, we may learn, we might be your game.